Dear listener, we have some administrative details or an announcement, as otherwise
that,
known.
Yeah, that sounds administrative details sounds boring.
Either yeah, that or it sounds like our listeners are in trouble. It's like, come in here and sit down. We have some administrative details.
That's right. And if we knew your middle name, we'd use it. but no, actually, this is exciting. This is an announcement that is really a neat, neat opportunity.
Yes.
We are providing the opportunity for new patrons or our present patrons to win a an insulated drinking vessel. And I've seen it. It is a neat piece of work. I'm telling you, this is high quality. Tom, why don't you tell them a little bit more about it?
Drinking vessel.
Well, I don't, because we were talking about it. Do you call it a tumbler? I don't know technically.
A tumbler, a mug, I don't know. If you're familiar at all with my online store, you have seen these before. Benchmademanliness.com. These are things that I make, and I do sell these online. Just sold a couple within the last couple weeks again. This is made from sapele wood, which looks very much like mahogany, and it's a coffee travel tumbler, and it is real wood. Yes. It is not faux wood.
This is the real deal. This is an actual lathed wood deal.
I had a guy at a local coffee shop wanted to buy a bunch of these from me to sell in his store, and in his coffee shop. He ended up instead going with versions made in China. Where they have they're like the stainless steel, and they have this foil material on them that's painted to look like wood and everything. And I've seen regulars who go in there before, and what happens with those, you can see it on the mug. The bottom edge, it starts to peel, and the foil starts coming up, and eventually you just end up with a blank stainless steel mug because it all peels off. These, however, are made of actual wood. And the inside is insulated with polyurethane foam, and then it is there's a stainless steel liner placed inside, and that's where the coffee is held. So this will keep your coffee hot as long as you need it to, I guess. I mean,
retails $60.
Yeah,
and gets 5-star reviews. So, I mean, this thing is a top of the line.
Yeah, this isn't something you buy at Walmart. This is an artisan item. These do sell in my store, and this item always gets 5-star reviews. If I do say so myself, but that's why I say it's something that if you have an opportunity to win one of these, you should probably take it. Because these are really cool, items to have people look at it and go, wow, what is that? Where'd you get that? It has, of course, the travel lid here with the little snapping thing that keeps it closed, so your coffee doesn't spill out. When you hit a bump or something like that.
So this is a patron only competition, and what that means is that in order to have an opportunity to win that cup, then you have to become a patron, or if you're already a patron, you will be entered.
Yes, automatically.
And there are different there's different levels of support for the podcast, all the way down to there's a teacher.
Teacher and student level,
for $1. There's an elite level for up to, was that $7, $8 an episode? Eight, okay. And that comes with other perks of its own.
But any patron, really. If you become a patron at any level,
you
are automatically entered to win this mug. The contest will go out until September 27th, likely at midnight there, September 27th. So be sure to become a patron before then. And you'll be automatically entered to win this mug. We'll ship it to you, and you can enjoy drinking out of the coolest mug ever.
It's cool. I saw it and I thought, I want one of those.
Yeah. Now, our listeners might be thinking, well, you know, I don't really like entering contests. You know, I have just as much a shot as anybody else winning these things, and I never win anything. Well. You may actually be able to get an extra entry, a bonus entry to win this mug, simply by sharing this episode on Facebook. That's all that you need to do. Share it. If you want to comment on it and tell your friends maybe why you liked that episode, or tell them that they can become a patron too and have the opportunity of winning a mug if they want. So if you want to get an extra bonus entry, just share it on Facebook. That'll help this podcast get closer to our goal, which is advertising in a major Christian publication that we will announce just prior to that publishing. So, which we're excited about, but we're looking to get to that goal as soon as possible. We're getting a little antsy. So we're like, let's give something away.
Yeah. So thanks for helping us out, considering that, sharing it with your friends and becoming part of our patron club.
Yes. Thank you. Commercial done.
Well, welcome back to Reason Together, the podcast for Christians who think about stuff. I am your host, Daniel Fox, along with my good friend here, Thomas Balsamo. Hey. And Thomas, how are you doing today?
Good. I'm good. I'm fine. A little bruised up today. Jiu-jitsu is kind of rougher today.
Oh, man.
I've really been liking this cycle, though. We do different material through different cycles, and we've been working on X-guard and single leg X-guard and heel hooks and knee bars. We've been working on there's a pretty cool knee bar right from like single leg X-guard, which I know most of our listeners are like, what in the world are you talking about? It's just pretty cool stuff. And it's neat because if the knee bar doesn't work out, you've got this really great Achilles heel lock right there that hurts a lot. And someone actually in a UFC fight just this past week, I think, won in like 14 seconds with that.
Wow.
First round, 14 seconds in. Boom. Catches that. Right. Done. And the guy didn't tap, apparently. He was trying to tough it out, and it like...
Oh, no.
It like broke his ankle or something like that. It broke his Achilles. It damaged him. He's going to be out of commission for a while.
Now, here's a side question, because you had talked in our last episode, I believe, about kind of being recently in a public area where some guys got kind of obnoxious and things like that. Mm-hmm. With this training that you do you feel like it has improved or just strengthened your confidence, your personal confidence, just in you're not scared of encounters, or does it make you still, like you said, there's still that defensive sense that you're not trying to get into a fight.
Yeah.
But do you feel just confident, generally speaking, that
you
could get out of a tough situation?
It certainly does improve your confidence, but a lot of people are afraid of the idea of training in some sort of self-defense because they're like, oh, it's going to make you into a bully type person who's walking around puffing their chest out. Not really. In fact, one of the things our instructors who teaches kids too, all the way down to, 3 and 4 years old, he says, it actually has the opposite effect on children. Instead of them being bully-like, like they were before, they tend to become more calm because they feel like they don't have to prove themselves to anybody because they do that on the mats.
Okay.
But interesting. So it's like at the same time, it makes you more confident that you could handle yourself in situations. But at the same time, you do realize when you practice on the mat just how quickly things can go wrong. And it's like, yeah, I know that I have a higher percentage chance of actually beating this guy if we got into a fight, but all it takes is one time for him to get quote unquote lucky, as they say, and I lose, right? So there is still some fragility, you know, training in self-defense doesn't make somebody impervious, but you kind of start to realize that on the mats.
Yeah, neat. Okay, good thought.
Sorry about the long answer, but...
No, it's fine.
Yeah, but that's been going on, and then I've been working on another cowboy hat rack that a customer has ordered from Jackson, Wyoming. So
yes.
He has like 10 cowboy hats, and he wants to get two of these racks. Yeah,
great.
So, and I'm starting a new series, started it last Sunday in the book of Galatians. We finished Colossians. So now we're kind of jumping backwards here. I guess you call it backwards, chronologically anyway, to Galatians, purportedly one of the earliest books that the Apostle Paul wrote. Mm-hmm. So we're jumping over there. And then we finished the epistles of John. So finished up with 3 John last week also. I've got a couple things that I'm still kind of working on. I may start into the book of Jude on Sunday, or I may start into the pastoral epistles. And I'm leaning towards the pastoral epistles. So
That sounds fun.
Yeah. So what's been going on with you?
I've been gearing up for homeschool. We've got 5 kids in school this year, different grade levels, and so we've really tried to be prepared with structure and things like that. And so we're a couple days into it, and so far so good. And nothing's blown up or melted down yet. Too much.
Anyway. That's a plus.
Yeah, right. And then we're looking 2 weeks. In 2 weeks, we're headed to Aruba as a family. And so I'd visit some missionary friends there and spend the time. So that's quite an opportunity for the family. And so we're preparing music for that. And anyway, that'll be good. So that's kind of seems like the big the big things that are happening.
Good.
Right now good. For me. Yep.
Sounds exciting. All right. Well, we've got some feedback if you're ready to move into that.
Good. Yeah. I'd like to hear feedback.
This is from our last episode, episode 63. One of the questions that we dealt with was when do you technically consider your child to be an adult? And we, of course, took, you know, if I could sum it up, that it's not at age 18. That's more of a cultural marker that has been placed on it. We placed adulthood basically at the level of maturity when someone is also out from under what's the word I'm looking for? From under their parents, when their parents are paying for things.
Primarily. Okay.
My mind just totally stopped for a second.
Patronage.
Yeah. But, you know, so there's independence from the parent, but there's also a maturity as well. And I think both of those things need to be elements. It's not just age 18. And I think it's dangerous when a parent kind of lets go of the ropes when they turn 18, regardless of whether or not those things are in place. That's kind of where we landed.
Right. Yes.
So
yes.
We got some feedback from one of our patrons. He says, this is from Omar. Good podcast. I enjoyed the discussion about adulthood. I've often tried to find a biblical answer to the question of when adulthood begins. Interestingly, when the Israelites were ready to enter the Promised Land, on the Council of the Ten Spies, the people as a whole voted not to go into Canaan. As a result, God said that all those who were 20 and older would die in the wilderness. That's Numbers 14:29. So apparently, in this instance, God considered 20 years old to be old enough to be out from their parents' authority. He puts a question mark on that. This was also the age at which they were military eligible, according to Numbers 1:45. On the other hand, we have the example of Abraham, who took it as a personal responsibility to find a wife for his 40-year-old son, Isaac. he goes on here a couple more things. I'm trying to make it brief here. He says, at some point, a young adult does become responsible to make his own choices, but I think it's obviously foolish for a parent or child to purposefully cut themselves off from advising and helping each other, no matter the age. Good point. So he brings in a couple of biblical illustrations here that put the age at 20, apparently. Responsible for their own choices there.
And that is a good point. Part of that, I would say, again, you can't just tie it to a number like to say when they reach this age, boom, they are ready. Now, again, legally, in a sense, you do have there has to be a number in some respects, you know, as far as when can he do this according to society or to the law. So in that case, partly what I'm seeing is, you know, that by 20 years of age, you know, they were fit, or they were perceived able to even be warriors. I mean, to be fighters, to be in. So in a sense, to me, that lays a responsibility back on the parents that, hey, you've got 2 decades to develop a responsible, mature, strong, you know,
better get it right.
level-headed. I mean, yeah. So, I mean, there is a kind of an expectation on the parents there too. It's not just, well, he just didn't mature fast enough necessarily. It depends on maybe what they were putting into place. Now, I understand kids mature maybe at different rates, but there, I was thinking of another Bible passage, and I hadn't seen back in the passage yet if it actually said how old he was. But in John chapter 9, where they're blind man, a man born blind. And of course, Jesus heals him, and the religious officials just, you know, keep questioning him and pestering him. Who was it, you know, and how did he heal you? And he repeats the answer and repeats the answer, and they're getting mad at him. But you remember the environment was toxic enough that his parents didn't really want to like step up to the plate in defense of him necessarily or whatever. You know, they didn't want to like step into the middle of this boiling cauldron because they knew they could be cast out of the synagogue. And so they said, he is of age, ask him. You know what I mean? And so I'm thinking, well, that there's that phrase, he is of age. Mm-hmm. You kind of like, he's old enough to answer his own, you know, questions, ask him. But now I was trying to look back and say, well, what is of age, you know?
Right.
I haven't found that yet. But that 20-year-old reference is a good point.
Yeah, good.
Otherwise,
thoughts.
Like in the New Testament, you know, you see Timothy travels with Paul. Well, how old was Timothy, you know? Well, I don't know for sure. I don't think we have an exact number, but anyway.
Yeah. Good. But yeah, we're not saying that 20 is prescriptive.
Correct.
We're saying that generally it is descriptive of Israel's circumstance then. We're still placing maturity and independence on the stipulations here for adulthood.
Yeah, I would say to be considered, I guess, adult. Yeah, doesn't mean that that a boy can't say, hey, look, I don't have to take, you know, I want out of here. I'm going to go get married. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? But getting married doesn't necessarily make him a mature adult.
Right.
You know what I mean? It may legally mean that he's married or he's reached the age of adulthood, but in the perspective of people who see him, he may not really be considered.
I was just thinking,
they're not going to call him a kid.
I was just thinking, I'm sure there's probably some wives that would hear you say that just then and go, uh-huh. Anyway.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's good feedback. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
On to our questions for each other. You actually pulled in a few here more than I did, so why don't you get us started with those?
Okay, I will. Now, this may sound a little bit corny, but is it outside, is it unorthodox to believe that God creates outside of creation week? For instance, he created in 6 days and he was finished. Does that mean he never created anything else again?
No, I don't think so. I think what you're talking about is the difference between mediate and immediate creation, correct?
Oh, okay.
I think that's how Thiessen breaks it down.
That's a good point. I see what you're saying.
And if I remember right, and it's been several years since I've looked through that part of his book, but mediate creation, or I should say immediate, I'll start with that one. Immediate is the ex nihilo type creation that he did in the beginning. And mediate creation is everything following the finishing of that creation week. And is that the right definition of that? Or am I getting
I think I would add something to it. I don't remember his definition, but that immediate would be by direct act and mediate would mean
reproduction.
Yes, would be like by means.
I see.
By a system that's in place.
Right. But one example I think he gave, if I remember right, was when Jesus created the food to feed the 5,000. The times that he did that. I think there's two times that he did that.
Ah, good point. Yes.
Now you
that
could
obvious.
You could say, well, I mean, yeah, he did it by means. He had you know, two loaves and fish, but that's not natural means. It's not like that was reproduction or growth in some way. He literally made it appear in those baskets somehow. That would mm-hmm. be like immediate creation, wouldn't it?
That seems like it. A good example of closest thing there since creation, the creation week. That's a good point. I mean,
I don't think it's bizarre to think that certain creation has happened since the end of the creation week. But I bet I know where you're going with this. But go ahead. You look like you want to say something.
Well, where it came from was I don't know if I was talking to one of my kids or something, or I was talking to somebody about a baby, you know, and mm-hmm. saying, you know, God created this baby or whatever. And then the thought crossed my mind, well, you know, I mean, I guess, is that, you know, the best way to say that, or is that factual? I mean, yes, God creates the baby, but, and I'll ask another, in another episode, I've got another question that I want to stew on a little bit more before I ask you, kind of related to that. But yeah, mm-hmm. with specifically, babies in that sense is that is that God creating again? Did he create another life?
Yeah.
He created life in the beginning. Is he creating life and life and life and life constantly?
Yeah.
It says in Philippians, Revelation 4, is it verse 11? For thy pleasure they are and were created.
Yep, 4:11.
And so that kind of gives a present and past tense of creation, that while something was created, there's still more creation taking place. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't have to be, at least to settle that question, it doesn't have to be outside the pale of orthodoxy to say that God's still creating something.
Well, I think the problem that some people have with that is simply because at the end of the creation week... Really? Come on. Why?
Leave me alone.
It's stealing my thunder again, just as I was getting up ahead of steam there with my answer.
Rewind, that was sounding good.
I'm going to forget what I was thinking. I know it.
Write it down. I'm
writing it down. Okay. So my issue, or I shouldn't say my issue, I say the issue that people often take with the idea that the creation of a new life in the womb is an immediate creation is because people will go back to Genesis and say, well, on the sixth day, God said he ceased from all his work and the creation work was done. And for that reason, people would then see immediate creation in the womb being a contradiction of day six of the creation week when God said he ceased from his work. So I think a lot of times folks with that view will actually suggest that all of the subsequent people that would ever exist were basically, you know, quote, in the loins of Adam. I don't know if there's any teeth to that view or not, but they use that in part to also then justify the federal head view, the idea of why it is then that all sinners or all people are thus sinners because of Adam.
Sinners in Adam,
because they were in Adam, literally is what they would say.
Right, yeah. And I don't know that that has to be the only argument for the federal head discussion, right. But however, I can't say that I really disagree with the fact that the human race was in the loins of Adam or Adam and Eve, but I would have to discuss with that person who is really trying to dismiss the idea of subsequent creation is to say, okay, even if it seems like scientifically speaking, humanity can create, as it were, new, you know, biological offspring, what gives them a soul?
Right, right.
You know, where people can't create a spiritual entity.
No.
And so where does that come from? You know, what makes your child dynamic? What, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What makes them who they are? Where does that come from? Well, if God, we don't believe in the Mormon view that those are just spirit children floating around for millions of years and he now coupled that with a physical body. No, that's a new person.
Right.
You follow what I'm saying?
But how is that, like, if you say that there's some possibly veracity to the idea of all people being in the loins of Adam, so to speak, would that not include their living soul? You know what I'm saying?
No, I mean, I don't think so.
I just don't, but how can you say that, you know, the whole idea of being in the loins of Adam could be true, but then say that we're not just souls floating around somewhere. You know what I mean? Because it would seem like you would have two views that are conflicting.
I guess I'm seeing it from a physical sense that obviously through reproduction, everybody was in the loins of Adam, but I didn't really think of the soul coupled to it.
Yeah.
Thought that's interesting.
Well, that the question really is one that I don't think we can answer fully, it brings up a lot of other questions. You know, what is the consciousness? People try to answer that question. We of course believe in the living soul. But how is the consciousness and, you know, the living soul then related to the physical body? You know, at what point do those things mesh? You know, there's really a lot of other questions that can kind of come up from that discussion.
Well, and it's good to recognize, you know, to be honest enough with certain debates and certain questions to go, I don't think that really can be declaratively or dogmatically answer.
No, it can't.
I mean, we might feel like we've got a good case, or, you know, I'm going to rest here, you know, not knowing, you know, the absolute perfect spot. Here's where I'm going to land based on the evidence I have. But to say, look, if you disagree a little bit, that's okay.
Yeah, and on a scale of importance, I don't know that this one really ranks super high. Would you agree? I mean, or is there some implication that I'm missing?
Oh, well, I mean, I would say not as high, certainly, as other things, though I think if you keep following the trail, yes, you're going to hit some big issues. For instance, well, if the federal head means that there is a spirituality, you know, to the child bound up, you know, like everybody was in Adam, including their soul. Well, where did that soul exist before their body existed? Well, you know, then you are kind of getting into some dangerous territory.
Yes.
And that's something for people to think about is, so many times it's, you know, following the trail, or where does that argument point you, or that's a step in what direction, to say, if I followed that logic, if I followed that thinking, where would it take me? And it may be that where it's going to take you is rather dangerous, you know? And I was sharing with you just recently about some preaching I had heard, and how I felt like it was floating out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was, I was going, whoa. Now, the way it was being stated was, I think, maybe, you know, intentional and controlled and things like that. But it's like, no, wait a minute. If we follow that, you know, that's getting into some dangerous territory. Maybe not the way it was stated, or that immediate thought or the immediate suggestion, but two steps down the road wasn't where you want to be.
Yeah.
So that's good for people to think, is to realize that one, you know, it may seem kind of benign on the surface, but, you know, following it down the road could be worse. But no, I mean, in a sense, as far as saying, is a baby a creation of, you know, is immediate creation, is that like a massive deal? Well, it's not on par, obviously, with other issues of, you know, the person of Christ.
Ultimately,
and
it's
salvation.
All still a creation of God. Generally
speaking. Yeah, that's true.
Didn't come from anywhere else.
It all started somewhere, right?
Yeah.
Good.
Okay. All right. If our listeners have any thoughts about that, feel free to send them in.
Yeah.
I've got one for you here. This one is from Timothy, and this one asks, do dreams mean anything? And not necessarily from the standpoint of revelation, but understanding. Basically, you know, he's acknowledging that no, God does not give us new information or revelation by way of dreams. He's aware of that, it seems. But do dreams, can you ever learn something or interpret something or understand something better from a dream? Do they have meaning?
I personally would say no, in the sense that I think a dream is not so much a gift, because even if it wasn't a new revelation, it was a means of understanding. It is, in a sense, a revelation of God. It is a sense in which God is working on the mind to communicate something, even if it's, you know, to clarify something you already know. In my mind, from a physiological standpoint, that dreams are just kind of the working of the brain. You know what I mean? They're just, and I don't understand all that, but I don't see it as God. Now, I will say that I think a dream, I'm going to kind of go say, here's how far I can go with that personally, is I think a dream can maybe confirm something that you know, or can just bring a vividness to something that you know. And if you said, man, I woke up and all of a sudden I understood that truth, I don't know that I would say that was, and maybe that's going back to our last question, a direct act of God, but just something that happens sometimes, as, you know, like when preachers say, I was sleeping, man, I woke up and I was like, man, that's a good idea. And they wrote it down.
I was getting ready to bring in that defense, because I have experienced this once, possibly twice in my life, where I'm not saying I got any kind of revelation or new truth. No angel came to me in the night. I didn't see any visions, but as I was sleeping, I was dreaming content, if I could say it that way. I was thinking about something important. I think at least the one time that this happened to me, and I can't remember the exact subject, it was something regarding what I was going to be preaching on. I was thinking about my message while I was sleeping, apparently. And something clicked, and I understood it, or at least a way to phrase it or explain it, enough that it woke me up, and I said, I need to write that down. I said to myself, I need to write that down. And actually gave me a better way of explaining it. Now, it wasn't a new revelation. It wasn't a new thought that wasn't there before. It's just it was maybe a better way of explaining my understanding of it.
So maybe I'm just wording it differently than he is. I mean, I could certainly say, did God permit that to happen, or did God, you know, bless in that way? Yes, but did God specifically communicate that thought to me? I'd go, I would just think that's the outworking of the meditations of a very intricate thing that we have, you know, called the brain.
So,
and how that works.
What do you say to Christians who, and I've had people actually say this to me before, that they had woken up in a cold sweat because they'd had a negative dream about such and such person or such and such issue, and they took action on it the following day, and it turned out that everything worked out good because of the action that they took. You know what I mean? That somehow the unsettling feeling they had in their sleep from a dream resulted in action that actually helped something. What are your
thoughts? Right, and I guess my thought would be to say, I really don't know that I can explain that, that I have a great explanation right now. I guess I kind of am aware a little bit of what you're talking about, those kind of scenarios. But what that's also doing in that context is it's saying that all of the, that it was a critical element to that whole story.
Yeah.
It's to say that those, whatever action I took that altered the course of what was going to happen and it came to a good result, wouldn't have happened had I not had that unsettled feeling and blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If they give you a story that, well, that could have turned out that way anyway.
I don't know. Maybe we're overthinking it, because have you ever had a lack of peace about something while you were awake?
Yes.
That caused you to take action that you might not have taken if you felt better about the thing. And I guess much as I want to disbelieve the veracity of a dream, like the scenario we're talking about, because it sounds utterly ridiculous, to be honest. And I hate it when Christians tell me about stuff like that, because it's they oftentimes get this lofty tone in their voice, and they get this mystical glossy look in their eyes. And it's like, okay, really?
If only you've been where I've been and experienced what I've experienced.
Right. But I mean... Yeah. I can't discount that while I'm awake, there are times where the Lord gives me an unsettled feeling about something that may even result in almost a, not a panic, but a really unsettled feeling, where I would make a decision based on the sense that I get from it. I'm not talking a mystical sense, just a lack of peace about something. And I could say, if God can do that while I'm awake, could he not do that while I'm asleep? And basically the sleeping mind of a person like that is doing something that cognitively they're unable to do while they're awake. So your brain works better in the nighttime.
Yeah, that's to go to sleep. You think better.
Yeah.
Yes, and I guess I would. I mean, I see what you're saying, and can the Holy Spirit? Because I mean, we struggle against a naturalistic perspective when we're trying to describe the working of the Holy Spirit in our heart, right? Mm-hmm. How do you describe what the Holy Spirit did in my heart? He worked in my heart. He moved me. Blah 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 blah. Well, that's kind of Christian speak, and it is hard to explain to an unbeliever. I get that. It can sound weird, and if we translate that to a nighttime, but still, I guess I would just be reticent to call that a dream. You know, as in some, you know, there were actual actors playing out in my mind in that typical weird, convoluted sphere that we call a dream. You know what I mean? Where it sort of makes sense, but doesn't make sense. And then I woke up and I acted on that dream. And you know what I mean?
So you're seeing the distinction between a dream and an actual willful cognition, right?
Yes, kind of so.
Are you suggesting then that dreaming is completely autonomous? It's its own thing that we have no control over?
Well, I mean, it, like a direct control over typically, because I mean, I think we do have a control over it because it's basically the outworking of inputs, you know, so it depends on the inputs and it's also intricate. But, and I know somebody's going to say, well, like, I realized I was having a dream and I changed it. You know what I mean? I don't know if you've ever been in a dream like that. Yeah. And I guess I can't deny that either. But I guess there's just something about the use of the word dream to describe what, you know, drove my efforts or that, you know, but maybe I'm just overstating the case. I mean, if it's stated as, okay, this dream somehow, you know, led me to do something, but I didn't sense that this was extra revelation outside of just Holy Spirit leading. It wasn't new truth. It was just a direction. Okay. Yeah. You know,
so to go back to what you said, you know, the idea about dreams just basically being an output of whatever has reached our inputs. here's a question. Mm-hmm. We can't always control what reaches our inputs in a day, right?
True.
We can control it to a point, right? We can look away from things. We can plug our ears. We can walk away from certain places. But ultimately, you can't control everything in your inputs. So if something gets into your inputs, eyes, ears, hands, whatever, and that works its way out in your dreams, can you essentially sin in your dreams unwillfully? Is that a dumb question?
No.
I think it feels like a dumb question, to be honest.
Are you basically saying, like, if a guy thought impure thoughts in his dream, but then he says, well, I wasn't even cognizant. Like, I wasn't even, yeah. I was in my subconscious. How can I, you know, be at fault for that? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, that is what
I'm
asking.
Or are you thinking of something?
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. Because I had an evangelist one time when I was a kid. When we prayed together, he actually asked the Lord to forgive him for any dreams he might have had in the night. And I remember thinking at the time, that seems kind of strange, but okay.
Well, for one, I would say you don't have to ask forgiveness for something you don't even remember. I mean, you know,
but
like,
I mean,
I don't even know if I...
We're presuming that you remember it.
Okay, but let's presume that I remember it. That's an interesting question. I mean, I guess on the face, I'd have to say no, but... But would I be grieved by it still? Yes.
Sure.
You know, and in a sense, that's a punishment, I guess. But doesn't have to be counted a punishment. But I mean, do I have to confess? Yeah, I it's interesting, I guess, to think of what is confession.
It's
when I think about what I dreamed, and I realize what I dreamed. You know, I just, confession to me seems automatic to say, oh God, that, I don't like that. That was bad. That was a bad dream. I feel defiled having even thought it.
Yeah.
Well, okay. That is confession.
Yeah.
No, I guess the question is, did you need forgiveness? Maybe that's the question, you know what I mean? But do you need to confess? Well, I think that's kind of automatic. I mean,
I see that. It just makes you wonder, you know, if a guy can dream something sinful, but he's not responsible for his dreams, then who is? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, can some? How? I don't know. It just it brings up a lot of
interesting
of questions. I know probably more questions than answers, and maybe that's frustrating to some listeners, but we're just kind of reasoning together on this. So
yeah, we are. And I think there is some value. And I, like you said, it brings up more questions than it does answers, but I think there is some value in sometimes defining what has to be confessed. I did hear a preacher recently say, and I, and I, I guess I want to do some more thinking on it. But what he said, when he said it, I thought, ah, good, because he was saying, it's one thing if you're kind of dwelling on, you know, wrong thoughts mm-hmm. or the wrong thing, and your mind is, you know, stewing on inappropriate things, or you're putting yourself in a context where it's more likely that you'll think a bad thought, and then you think a bad thought. Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of because of the context, because of where you've allowed yourself to be. But he said, have you ever been, you know, you're just sitting there reading a book, or you're writing something, and all of a sudden, kawhammo, this thought just comes out of nowhere mm-hmm. and hits you, and you're like, where did that thought come yeah. from? You know, that wasn't the desire of my heart that I think that thing.
Yeah.
And his take on it was that was a fiery dart. And he made the statement, you don't need to confess it, you need to reject it. Kind of like that was Satan trying to say, think this thought. And you say, no, I'm not going to think that thought.
Do you think that's what that's referring to? Fiery darts?
Well, no. What I think about the fiery darts is that I don't know that we can really lock down on a specific definition and say, this absolutely is a fiery sure. dart. But could, you know, would that be an allowable possibility? Well, I think so. At least at first glance. But his point being that I wasn't premeditating this thought, at least to my own, not like I wasn't putting myself in an environment where that thought came naturally. Yeah. It was just all of a sudden, whoa, out of nowhere. And so I bring every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. But to say, I just thought it, you know, therefore I must confess because I'm wicked. It's kind of like saying, you're checking out in the grocery store and you happen to glance over and you're not thinking about it and you see a magazine. Oh Lord, I'm sorry I even saw that. Well, the sin wasn't seeing. You know what I mean? Just the fact that my eyes saw it inadvertently, I wasn't thinking, I'm sorry. You don't technically need to apologize.
I guess just the troubling thought about that whole interpretation of fiery dart there by that preacher you're talking about mm-hmm. is the idea that Satan can put a thought in my mind.
True. And where does it lead?
Yeah, it's like, well, where does it come from? That troubles me. Because, I mean, you know, yeah, we talk about the world, the flesh, and the devil. You know, those are three different sources there, really. But, you know, I'm my own person. I'm responsible.
Yes, so and I agree.
You have to wonder at what point does an external temptation then become an internal temptation? You know, like that.
And that's the thought there is, what I'm saying is confessing discussion. For an external thing. But yes, what you're stating there in his definition of the fiery darts, I even thought when he was saying it, well, I don't think we can really lock that down.
Yeah.
But the point about, you know, certain things don't have to be confessed, they just have to be rejected, has a place, maybe not exactly where he was putting it.
It does make some sense. Yeah. I just, I don't know that I'd be too dogmatic about some of what his interpretation of fiery darts was.
true. Yeah. I agree.
Okay. Well, I'm afraid that's all we have time for.
Oh that my went goodness. Fast. Wow.
What did we do? Like three questions? We did like three questions.
Yeah. Two or three. Maybe only two. Yeah.
Well, we'll have to deal with these other ones in the after show, which you can become part of and receive those if you become a patron over at patreon.com/reasontogether.
Elite patron.
An elite patron. Yes. An elite patron only gets the after show. Or you can just become a patron at any level and you get some other perks and you also get automatically entered into the contest for this wooden travel tumbler. We'll include a link to that in the show notes and on the website there, in the post for this episode. So you can see pictures of it if you would like. And if you would like to send us some feedback or ask us a question that maybe we can bat around and possibly cause more questions, you can send that to reasontogetherpodcast@gmail.com. That's reasontogetherpodcast@gmail.com. And we'd certainly love to hear from you. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you on the next one. Encouraging balance, developing perspective, and connecting faith to practice. This is Reason Together.